Happy Aviation History Month. It's your boy, Greg, and here's what we've got taken off in the Popping Collars feed for November 2022. We're soaring into the world of media and journalism in pop culture on the latest Popping Collars. Hear us channel our inner Woodward and Bernstein. Or is that our inner Redford and Hoffman? Oh well. Make sure to keep your seatbelts buckled as we land another episode of the PC Music Diary this month. We've hit some turbulence on the latest Going on 30, and only Betsy and Liz can get us through this rough patch. They take flight this month with Thelma and Louise. Also, don't forget to vote for your favorite movies in our third annual Golden Poppers. Voting is now live on our website at poppingcollarspodcast.com. Speaking of climbing, Ryan Parker and I reach new altitudes in our conversation about the Camino de Santiago on this month's Sacred Six, when we discuss the Cantabrian Mountains and El Bierzo region of the trail. Thank you for flying the friendly podcast skies with the longest-running Episcopal podcast in the history of air travel. Now just sit back, relax, put those tray tables in their upright and locked positions, and keep those collars popped. Welcome back to the Sacred Six. Sometimes an item in pop culture is just too big for one podcast episode. That's where the show steps in. I'm your host, Greg Knight. With me is my very special guest, Ryan Parker. Ryan, we're almost to Santiago. How are you feeling?
This journey, it's like I'm walking it all over again. With less blisters, one less blister.
That's right. One step at a time.
Thanks for having me back. This is good fun.
Nice. Ryan and I are looking back at our individual experiences of hiking the Camino de Santiago in Spain. This month, we're focusing on the region of the Cantabrian Mountains and El Bierzo. So, Ryan, when you think back on hiking through the mountains again, what is it that you remember?
This again?
No, right? You see these mountains coming up on the horizon of the Meseta for like four straight days.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's no secret what's in store for you.
At that point, I don't know that I learned anything at this point of the journey that, you know, we hadn't kind of experienced or talked about, but just continually amazed by the people that we come in contact with, where those people are from, shared experiences, not just of the Camino, but of life. And I always go back to the Pete Holmes stand up. He has this bit where he says, "You think you're an American? Zoom out. Sense.
You're on a planet right now. You think you're in America? Zoom out. You're on a space rock floating in nothingness, infinite nothingness, and the infinite nothingness is expanding. That means endlessness is getting bigger. That makes no sense."
You know, you're a human being living on a rock floating through space. And I just think about that all the time, especially in these kind of hyper-nationalistic times. And experiences like the Camino awaken me to that, you know, we're just people on this rock. And we happen to be lucky enough to spend this time and have this journey and encounter each other. And I was looking back through some photos of this region. And I remember one day, we ran into two couples, a little bit older than us, but who walked, and it was just, I don't know if you had one of these, but we laughed the whole entire day and told stories and walked, and it was just, and I don't know that we ever saw them again on the Camino. I think they were staying a bit longer in that town where we ended up that night or whatever, but it was, man, it was a great day in that region.
No, it blows your mind. So like in this region, I remember getting to the town of Fontsabadan, right? So Fontsabadan is this little mountain town up on the top of this hill. It's like right before you get to Cruz Fera, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So just like I talked about last time, you know, my people were always first bar, last beer. So you go to the first bar, there's Tony from Croatia. He's hanging out with Nigel from the UK. There's a girl that just started walking from Lyon, who's from Finland. There's a couple that I had started the trail with who were from Oregon, John and Megan from Oregon. There was my friend Sean from South Korea. It's like everybody is there, and it's, you are connecting with people from around the world who are all in the same place, who are all looking for something just like you're looking for something, you know? Yeah. And it's just, it really does. It like blows your mind that you're sitting there and you're hanging out with people from around the world that you've never met before and never knew that you had anything in common with. And it makes perfect sense that you're just sitting there having a beer and that eventually you're going to head down and have some pizza at this Italian pizza shop in town, you know, that's like the only Italian pizza on like in the entire country of Spain. It's just like, it just totally blows your mind.
Good morning, everyone. It is day 22 of the Camino de Santiago. Today we are walking from Astorga to Fontcebadon. Fun facts about Fontcebadon. It is perhaps best known as the home of the hermit Guaselmo. That's absolutely what I know it for. He cared for pilgrims as they navigated their way over the often treacherous mountain pass and was protected by King Alfonso VI. This pass was, until the mid-18th century, the preferred route into Galicia, and the townspeople of Fontcebadon dedicated themselves to marking the way and serving as guides. We are starting a new region today, the Cantabrian Mountains and El Bierzo region, which will be pretty short but full of activity, as I am currently looking at a string of mountains right in front of me, and that's what we're going to be doing for the next 4 days, climbing a bunch of mountains. And already I can tell you what marks this region from the others is change, big word, change, because physically I have a slight injury. I was walking around the streets of León, and all of a sudden my shin started hurting. My left shin, which is weird. It's not the usual place where you would get like cramp or anything like that. I was thinking, okay, maybe I got like a shin splint or something. I don't know. But it's been hurting for a couple of days now. I didn't bang it on anything that I know of, but now also like a red ring has formed on that foot, kind of around the ankle. So I don't know what's going on with my left leg. If it falls off, I'll let you know. But I feel bad because everything was going great for so long, and it just kind of feels like I'm starting this new section out on literally the wrong foot. So we'll see what happens. I'm walking right now. It's fine. Okay, so the other thing is, and you guys, I'm trying not to be judgmental about this, but yesterday was the longest day, right, on the meseta. It was hard. It was hot. It was long. The trail is not the kind of track that I usually like. It was those big sort of loose rocks that twist your ankles back and forth, and they just feel horrible to walk on. You can just feel blisters forming on the bottom of your feet. So anyway, walking through this one town, and all of a sudden a bus pulls up, and out jump these like fresh-faced, like really clean smelling, you know, like smell like flowers, folks kind of jump off the bus with like little day packs and artisanal walking sticks. And I'm just like, well, who the hell are you people? And they proceed to like not only walk the same trail that I am, but they just fly past me and stop at every stop and stuff like that. And then as we get towards the end, towards the city of Astorga, they load back up on their bus. to go into town. You guys, listen. Everybody should do the Camino the way that they want to do it. And if you want to get on a bus, drive to a section, walk a section, get back on a bus, go to your hotel, you absolutely should. Just yesterday, whew. Yesterday was not the best place for me, mindset-wise, to experience something like that. So, it just reminds me that as we get closer to the end here, closer to Galicia, like, we're adding new people on the trail constantly. There's all kinds of people that I've never seen before coming out of León. There's going to be a ton more people once we get over these mountains and into Galicia. You know, it's the nature of the thing. And it's almost like in your mind you build something and you think, well, this is what's real. You know, and that whole sort of back section of the meseta, I'm like, oh, well, this is what pilgrimage is. It's like this small group of people walking across Spain, going to Santiago together. And it's not. That's not real. It feels real in the moment. But no, like, this thing is so much larger than that. And so you shift your perspective a little bit and you allow for other ways of doing Camino to come in. But still, when you've got a bad leg on day 21, a little judgment creeps in there. Anyway, we'll see what the mountains have in store for us. All right, let's climb these mountains. Oh, since I was complaining about the loose rock surface for the trail yesterday, why don't we go over the different types of tracks that you run into on the Camino de Santiago. We'll start with pavement. Pavement, not that bad, actually. A lot of people hate it. They say that it makes their feet hurt. It does make your feet hurt. Like, the bottoms of your feet kind of hurt after walking on pavement for a long time. But you know what? It's better than twisting ankles. Gravel. Gravel's pretty great. The only problem with gravel is, depending on how loose it is, it can sort of feel like you're kind of walking through quicksand sometimes. Like, you feel like you're not making a ton of progress. What else? Ooh, cobblestones. Cobblestones? Not great. Those are like in, you know, old medieval towns and stuff like that, when you're walking through the historic districts. The problem with the cobblestones is that your feet go every which way. It doesn't feel great. Oh, the natural path, like the sandy kind of path, perfect. Like, the ground has, like, just enough give to it. It's a little dusty, but that's okay. Like, it's like a perfect kind of walking path. Really soft, really natural. Your foot feels great. That's probably the most preferred kind of path. Grass? I don't know. I feel like we walk on grass very limited. I mean, obviously there's a ton of people, so, you know, any grass that you walk on is going to get worn down. I mean, there's a little grass, like, area in St. Jean that you walk through. It's fine, you know. And then finally, yeah, that loose rock stuff. Holy cow, man. And, like, Spain is full of it. And it's like this red kind of thing. So it's like red, loose, gravelish, sandy kind of stuff. That's what you want to step on. Because the other are like fist-sized rocks that are just kind of littered throughout, and they're all loose. And you step on those, and it's like you twist your ankle, they slide out from under your feet. So you've just got to constantly pay attention to where you're walking. Like, you can't look at anything else except the terrain in front of you. And it feels like it takes forever because that little, like, sandy, gravelly rock stuff that you want to be walking in just kind of, like, sucks your feet down into the earth. It's just the worst. And unfortunately, we've seen it way too much on this trail, especially yesterday. It was just all over the place yesterday. It is day 23 on the Camino de Santiago. Good morning, everyone. We are walking today from Fontsabadan to Ponferrada. Some fun facts about Ponferrada. Ponferrada was at one point one of the most important of the Roman settlements due to its location at the junction of two rivers, the Sil and Boeza, in a valley both fertile and rich in minerals. Its name derives from the construction of its original bridge. Built in 1082, it was one of the first to be decorated with iron, and so Pons Ferrata became Ponferrada. The original bridge no longer exists. Boy, wah-wah, like a bummer of an ending there. What's going on? I just left the Cruz Ferro, which is one of the important markers on the Camino Trail. It's this giant iron cross that sits just past Fontsabadan at one of the highest points on the Camino. It's just, it's one of those markers that exists on the Camino. And what happens, the tradition that happens, is that people bring a rock from home, wherever their home is, and they leave it at the foot of the cross. And so when you get there, there's this giant mound of rocks that are just kind of sitting there, and you add your little rock onto this giant pile. I mean, there's a lot of these things on the trail that are sort of manufactured moments, you know? They're kind of like tradition or expectation, or, you know, it's something that all pilgrims do. And sometimes a lot of those things can feel forced. You know, even in like our normal lives, well, church normal lives, like there are traditions that we have in like Episcopal parishes and stuff like that where, you know, nobody quite knows why we're doing what we're doing. We've just always done it, you know? And there are moments like that on the Camino Trail too. And I think the Cruz Ferro is one of those where it just kind of feels like you're doing something because everyone else told you to. But having had the experience of being there and seeing the sunrise and placing my rock at the foot of the cross, it was really moving. And I don't think that I was expecting it to be. I was thinking like I would feel a little detached from the experience, because so much of what's been meaningful to me about this has been stuff that's abnormal, stuff that's not sort of traditional. And so for something that's, you know, kind of a rite of passage to have a ton of meaning, it was special, I think. There's a reason why these things exist. There's a reason why, like, the rituals that we do at the Cruz Ferro or something like that exist. It's because it's had meaning for people for centuries. And I think that sometimes it's, you know, when something's incredibly popular or when a lot of people do things, we can have some hesitancy to like, well, it can't be that great, and hold it at arm's length. But actually, if you just kind of like accept it and let the experience in, it can be beautiful. And so I'm glad I had a beautiful moment this morning. I'm breathing heavy because we're climbing uphills, and pretty soon we're going to be climbing downhill, very steep downhill on the way, which, if you've done the Camino, you know the downhills can be a little worse than the uphills. So we'll see how many blisters we get tonight. Anyway, we'll talk to you later.
This was a highly emotional part for us, and as I assume is for a lot of people. And maybe you could, because this is a little probably, well, it is fresher in your mind. But the Cruz de Ferro, I think this is an interesting part of the journey, and it's so beautiful, man. because we timed it to be there at sunset. We had a couple things for my dad that we left there, who I had mentioned in a previous episode, had passed away that year. We would check in with one another repeatedly, but this was one of those days where we were like really attuned to what this journey was doing to us to this point, right? And what we were looking for, maybe what we want. You already said that, right? People come from all over for different reasons, and what were ours, and were expectations being met or shifting, and how they were. And you could tell people about what this is, but, and you could say, oh, this is manufactured, but all of this stuff is always manufactured, but right. It was very moving, I have to say.
Yeah, I hit the Crucifero at sunrise.
Did I say sunset?
Yeah.
I meant sunrise. I'm sorry.
Okay, that makes more sense because there's nothing on the other side.
I'm sorry. No, we had a time.
I was going to say, you would be walking for like 12 more kilometers before.
No, we were up at 5 a.m. Sorry, I meant sunrise. Okay. Sorry to interrupt there.
Yeah, so I hit it at sunrise as well. And I agree with you. I remember thinking before I got there, I was like, okay, I'll just throw my rock on the pile and head on out. Like, you know, I try not to get sentimental at stuff that feels forced.
Same.
But then it's like when you're there in the moment, you realize like why it's a thing, you know? It's like, oh, maybe it's manufactured, but there are so many layers of meaning underneath this manufactured thing that like it takes your breath away.
I get chills when you just said that, thinking about it, because for people who don't know, I mean, it's a spot on the Camino that is at elevation. It's, you know, it's up there on top of a hill, and it's a iron cross that stands atop a small mountain of rocks and memorabilia and sentimental items that people from all over the world for decades have brought to lay at the foot of this cross. And when you stand there and not only think about why you're there and what you're learning and how you're changing or growing or whatever, just to think about all the people who have passed there and and what they carried and what they left there and what that symbolized for them. I mean, it's hard not to get sentimental and emotional about it.
And change is just a perfect word for this region because the terrain itself is constantly changing. It's up, it's down. You know, you climb up this mountain to get to the Crucifero, and then you climb down the side of the mountain. I mean, straight down.
And then you got to go
up the side of the mountain, and then you got to go right back up again, right? And so it becomes like this roller coaster. But then also, like, the pace of the trail itself is changing too, and like all the things that you've become equipped with up to this point, like for 20 whatever days it is that you've been walking, usually by now you're at like day 24, day 25, something like that, like all the things that you've been carrying in your pack, those rules of life that you've learned that we talked about way back, they're not true nearly as much as they were like through the Meseta, for instance. Yep. And it's like, and now you're getting into like the space of like, I remember getting to Osobrero and thinking to myself, like, I can't believe I just climbed that crazy mountain. Like, I can't believe I made it all the way up to the top of this thing. And I see a church from the 9th century, you know, at the top of this hill. And I'm like, that is incredible. And then I turn and look past the church, and the very first thing I see is a souvenir shop selling license plates with people's names on them.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. This is what it's going to be from here on out. And that's what it is, basically.
It's amazing. It's so, I can't, yeah, and for us, it was compounded by the fact that the weather was changing. The time of year we're walking was getting colder quickly. We switched to jackets and long sleeve shirts, and you know, Osobrero is so beautiful because when you get up there, you're also above the clouds. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is how high up you go. I think is it higher than the first week?
I don't think it is, but just the way that the climate works on it, it makes it feel, because you're basically facing out over a valley. You're facing out over what it is that you walked to get there. And so the clouds form on top of that hill and then like lift off of the earth and then go out into that valley. And it's really, it's phenomenal to see.
Well, when we hit that small town, which is one of the more popular places on the Camino, as you've already said, it's certainly one that is visited by tourists. I would say tourists, not pilgrims, right? Mm-hmm. This is where you start to see that. We'll probably talk about that in the last episode, but we didn't stay there on purpose because it was that.
Mm.
But there's part of me that wishes we would have to kind of fly in the face of our own preconceived ideas, because I think we robbed ourselves the opportunity to kind of spend some time in that beautiful space of being so high up and feeling like you were above it all. Yeah, that was an interesting day, because you see that stuff and you're like, we're getting into Disneyland a little bit.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. All of a sudden you see, yeah, t-shirts with arrows on them. What is it? Like, okay. The other crazy thing is like unlicensed gear, right? So it's like Mickey Mouse walking the Camino, or like SpongeBob with a pilgrim hat or something like that. And you're just like, what is going on? Because there is nothing in the first 25 days that would prepare you for anything.
Do we have blinders on? I mean, it didn't feel like it was even that bad in the big cities that we've talked about already.
No, Burgos, León, no, absolutely not.
There's shell stuff everywhere, but that kind of commodification that you're talking about, where kind of the sublime and the ridiculous go boom like that, I think there's not really a lot of that until you hit this last.
Not until you hit the last like
section and a half, so to speak, these sections that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good morning, everyone. It is day 24 on the Camino de Santiago, and we are walking through a city right now. Kind of. We're walking through a park. It's nice. There's a river. Trees. We're in Ponferrada. Today, we're walking from Ponferrada to Villafranca del Bierzo. Fun facts about Villafranca del Bierzo. San Francisco de Assisi. St. Francis, as we would know him, passed through 800 years ago and is said to have founded the Iglesia de San Francisco. Do pay it a visit, as it often doubles as an exhibition hall, plus its elevation affords a good view as the sun sets in the valley. I will not be awake for sunset. During the Peninsula War, Villafranca was used as the headquarters for the Galician army and was sacked not once but three times by the English before finally falling into the hands of the French. Oh, okay, Villafranca, that makes sense. It is a wonder that any part of it remains. The most famous Villafranquino in recent centuries is Enrique Gil y Carrasco, a beloved author and world traveler. So, what's going on? Well, like I said, we are in Ponferrada, which is, you know, a pretty decent-sized city in this area of the country, the El Bierzo area of the country. It's got a castle. All that stuff. It's pretty exciting. Just walked past that. But here's the thing about Ponferrada, and it's something to keep in mind if you're ever doing the Camino. The Camino is a very dynamic thing. That means that the route that you're walking is not fixed, and you should never assume that it is. There are so many decisions that go into figuring out where to send pilgrims. A lot of times it depends on private landowners, whether or not landowners want pilgrims on their property. Sometimes it depends on cities. Do cities want to route pilgrims through major landmarks? That's what Ponferrada has done. They've changed the entire route. Like, my GPS map makes no sense based on the signs, because basically Ponferrada is trying to get you to go through all of their major sites in town. So it's this very sort of complicated, windy road that they send you on through the city. Whereas there are some cities that are like, no, we don't want pilgrims. Just have them bypass our town. And you'll just go, whoop, right around. So all that is to say that, like, the Camino is constantly changing. Like, the Ponferrada route it's only been within the last 2 years that this has changed. And it's all based on sort of politics, you know, city politics, local politics. What is it that people want? There are some Caminos, like the Camino Inglés, that has been totally redesigned based on what it is that Galicia wants for that pilgrimage. You know, that's something that has been interesting to see over the course of walking in Spain, is just kind of how politics are at play. You know, you get kind of like the street level of how politics play out. And the thumbnail version of this is this. When we started in France, right? I don't know that they identify super well with the Camino. I mean, they do have an office dedicated to it. I don't know. Yeah, I guess it is kind of a big deal for Saint-Jean. But for the surrounding farmers in sort of the Basque region of France, I think pilgrims are more of an annoyance than anything else. Like, they could probably do without them. And so then once you get into the Basque country of Spain, you're talking about the Navarra region of Spain. But, like, a lot of people don't identify themselves as Navarran. A lot of people identify themselves as Basque. In fact, like, a lot of people in that area of the country don't even identify them as themselves as Spanish, right? Like, they see themselves as a totally different country. And then you get to La Rioja. La Rioja is pretty normal. And then you get to Castilla y León. And every sign that you see is basically, like, the entire time you're in Castilla, someone has graffitied over the word León. It's like Castilla Solo, you know, or something. Castilla Solo. And then you cross over into León, and the exact opposite has happened. Somebody has graffitied out the word Castilla all over the place. And now, even though we're still in, technically, Castilla y León, we're in what's called the El Bierzo or Obierzo region of Spain. And now you'll see both Castilla and León crossed out and Bierzo kind of handwritten in. All that is to say that, you know, things are complicated, just like they are back in the States. Like, who identifies with what? And a lot of politics, you know, even though we think globally and think nationally when it comes to elections and stuff like that, a lot of politics play out at the local level. And that's certainly true for the Camino, certainly true for Spain. So just be aware that my Camino experience, where it is that I'm going, may be very different from your Camino experience and where it is that you're going, because it's constantly in flux. It's constantly changing. Okay, just walked through a bunch of towns, a bunch of pharmacias. Pharmacias are great. Not because I have to stop in a bunch of pharmacies, you know, I don't have that many issues. But pharmacies give you the time and the temperature on their little green cross that they have out front. Really good to have, especially during the day where you're like, starting to feel a little toasty. What's going on? But here's what needs to happen. Europe, I've got a message for you. We need to talk about Celsius, okay? Not great. Not a great scale for measuring temperature. Sorry, we've got it all over you in America with the Fahrenheit scale, okay? Here's the deal. Nobody cares what point water freezes, okay? Like, I got it, zero, I got it. You've nailed it. So here's what Fahrenheit does. It gives you degrees of like how hot or cold it is. Okay, so 30s, really cold, freezing cold. 40s, cold. 50s, pretty chilly. 60s, you know, getting better. 70s, pretty good. 80s, getting warm. 90s, hot. 100s, real hot. You get over here, man, and it's like 10 is freezing. 12 could be freezing. 15, it's maybe okay. 20s, those are pretty good. 20 is what you're looking for. When you walk past the pharmacy and you see a 19 or a 20, that's a good time. That's good walking weather. 30, 30's hot. Over 30 is real hot. It's hard to know the degrees in between. Like, the difference between 25 and 30 is pretty massive. Europe, I'm sorry. It's been great. You can keep your metric system. You can keep the kilometers and all that stuff. That's totally fine. Don't mind that. But we got to switch over to the Fahrenheit scale. You got to let go of the Celsius. I know you're proud of it. I know you want to keep it. It's not a good way to measure temperature. Sorry. This has been your American PSA for the day. Good morning, everyone. It is day 25 on the Camino de Santiago, and I am currently walking up the side of a mountain in the dark. Don't worry, I've got my headlamp on, but if you hear me trip over some rocks or anything like that, I don't know, maybe call somebody. It is day 25, and we are walking from Villafranca del Bierzo to O Sobrero. Fun facts about O Sobrero. O Sobrero has played an important role throughout the history of the Camino. It was the parish priest, Father Elias Valinha San Pedro, who is most responsible for the resurgence of the Camino. It was he that first painted the yellow arrows, and the tales that surrounded him doing so are the stuff of legend. Once, in 1982, he and his white Fiat van parked along a trail in the Pyrenees. It was a time when Basque separatists were trading blows with the Guardia Civil, and when they came upon him, suspicions were aroused. He opened the van door to reveal cans of yellow road paint, and identified himself as the parish priest of O Sobrero, long way from home. When asked what he was doing, his answer was as simple as it was prophetic. I am preparing a great invasion. It was he that orchestrated the installation of the granite Hitos as well. His death in 1989 meant that he only got to see the trickling start of his invasion. The parish church is also the setting for a miracle. According to legend, the Holy Grail was hidden there, and in the 14th century produced a miracle that was certified by Pope Innocent VIII. A peasant from a local village braved the hike up to O Sobrero during a dangerous snowstorm to hear Mass. The priest chastised him for endangering his life for a bit of bread and wine. At that, the bread and wine turned into flesh and blood, cementing the reputation of this small hamlet. Oh, wow. That is a lot of fun facts. Sometimes we have no fun facts. Sometimes we have maybe too many fun facts. Anyway. So that's where we're headed today. O Sobrero, which means we have to make one last push into the mountains. And we're starting with this one that I'm climbing right now. Two mountains today, you guys. One right outside of Villafranca, which is actually an optional mountain. I didn't have to climb this mountain. I chose to climb this mountain because the other alternative would be walking beside the road, which is like a mental mountain for me. Like it says, that push up to O Sobrero at the end of the day, that's a big one. That's actually why we're starting early. That's why I'm climbing a mountain in the dark, is because the temperature today, I'm sorry, we're leaving Celsius behind. I've made a commitment. The temperature today is supposed to get up to close to 100 degrees. So when we make that climb later today, which is at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we do it as early as possible. So this is also actually our very last episode for the Cantabrian Mountain and El Bierzo region of Spain. I know, it's very short, especially compared to the Meseta. And once we're in O Sobrero, we're actually technically already in Galicia. We'll be crossing over into Galicia today. So what are the lessons that we learned from the Cantabrian Mountains and El Bierzo? Well, I think it's actually been pretty consistent for me this whole time, which is this theme of change has been a big part of it. Starting back on day one, when the terrain changed from wheat fields and flat road walking to climbing a little bit and leaving the wheat fields behind. But also my physical condition changed. I went from being pretty perfect physically to now I've got this bad left leg. Sort of the change to the culture of the Camino, which is about to change even more pretty soon, which is the addition of walkers that we haven't seen up to this point. New walkers that started in Leon, and day trippers that are kind of driving a bus to town, walking for a little bit, getting back on the bus. Yeah, it is what it is. But, you know, you start thinking about change. Things change. Things perpetually move forward. If there's one lesson that I've learned about the Camino, it's rare that you go back. If you go backwards, then you're lost, right? It's really not something that happens. You sort of always go forward. That's just kind of the way that the model for this works. And if you think about it, it's a perfect biblical model, right? Like, the pillar of fire moved the Israelites through the Red Sea forward, right? Even though it looked like death, even though it looked like a giant mountain that you'll never get over, presence of God moved them through the wilderness, right? Forward, ever forward, even if they wanted to go back and go back to Egypt. Same thing for Jesus, right? When Peter says, "Oh, no, 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 you can't die." And Jesus' response is, "Get behind me, Satan," right? It's this idea that you have to keep going, because if you don't keep going, then you're stuck, you're lost. Listen, whenever we look backwards in life, whenever we think that what's behind us is better than what's in front of us, that's where we become stuck, like a pillar of salt. And our bodies don't move, and our brains don't think, and we are not able to process all the things that are happening. Change is inevitable. Progress is inevitable. You have to move forward. You can't go back. And yeah, I've said it before, when I was talking about pictures on the trail, all your best pictures are behind you, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that you can go back, because you can never go back, because going back is death. And so, yeah, so if I've learned one thing during this section, it's that I can't control who walks. I can't control how my body feels. I can't control any of that stuff. I just have to keep going. There's a saying here on the Camino Trail, Ultrea et Susea, which is Latin, which in English we would probably interpret as like onwards and upwards, right? But here it has a very specific spiritual meaning, which is that for every step you take forward, you take a step up towards heaven. Ultrea, forward, Susea, upwards. That's it for El Bierzo. Up next, Galicia. We will see you in the green forest region where we press on to Santiago.
There's one last thing that I took away from this region, which is like, this was the very last region of stuff that I didn't know, because I used to be one of those people that did the last 100 kilometers of the Camino and said, "Oh, I did the Camino." What I remember thinking in this section, like, "Oh, this is going to be the very last part of the Camino that I don't know." And like, there was almost a finality to the Camino experience before I even got to Santiago, if that makes any sense.
That's really, I mean, that's a unique perspective.
I'm curious for you, where did it start feeling like it was coming to an end for you?
There. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And even because we had read it, man, it's so interesting that you say that, because we had a guidebook with us. I know that we said we didn't read a lot before we left, but we did have a guidebook, and I think it's the one that like everybody uses. but it did a good job of outlining what the traditional route is, or the stops that everybody makes. And when we hit after O Sobrero, we started trying to find the towns in between the stops.
Yeah.
It was a good experience for us. If I did again, I probably would stop in the towns that everybody stopped in. Who could I meet? What experiences could we have? But it did feel like it was becoming a different thing, only but also because so many more people are suddenly around you.
Mm-hmm.
Some, those early days, those first 2 weeks outside of the bigger cities, there were some days where we hardly saw anybody.
Yeah.
Given the time when we left and how, but then some days you maybe see 30 people and then suddenly there are hundreds of people.
Right. And if you did see people, you generally knew who they were. Like either you knew them, like you were friends with them, or you had seen them walking on the trail.
You recognize them.
Yeah.
And you could at least wave and acknowledge and shared acknowledge. But you're right. It had become something different. And it really felt like, okay, this is going to end very quickly.
Yeah.
Not just physically ending, but like something like spiritually it's ending, because something shifts, I think, where you're like, okay, this is just different. And I'm going to try to embrace this for a new thing.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. So part of the journey is the end. And that's where we're going next time. We're going to get to Santiago next time. We're going to the region of Galicia.
I don't remember it being the journey ending this quickly.
Well, we've been on the fast track. We've been,
we've been on the people mover version.
That's right. So I will see you at the cathedral next time, Ryan.
Let's celebrate.
I'll buy the beer. 1 euro. That's easy for me to do. And here it is, your Camino moment of sin. I'm gonna be the man.